Linoleum knife.
Whoa, that was...
Let me try that again. Linoleum knife.
There we go. Much better. Now that we've blown out your speakers, a podcast of the cinema.
My clout score is 21. I just learned that. My name is Dave White. I'm the film critic of Movies.com. You're Alonzo Duraldi. You're the film critic of What the Flick and The Rap.
Yes. And the film reviews
What the Flick is the camera. The Rap is the typing.
Right. And I have a
cloud, score
of 69.
69.
With a 90-day high of 73. So there.
We just found out our clout scores. K-L-O-U-T.
It's a thing.
It's a. I didn't know it was a thing. Now I know it's a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should be upset about my tiny little baby clout score, or if I should be proud.
I think
that I'm, you know, not.
I think you have deep influence among a very select demographic. Is how that works. You're a cult figure.
So you're saying that I'm like Mink Stole.
Sort of. But she probably has a higher clout score than you.
I bet she has a much higher clout score than
Just a thought. Yeah.
I used to write for a magazine that she wrote for.
That's right.
We were in the same contributor box.
Yeah. You never met though, right?
No.
Yeah.
No. I knew when I saw that magazine's editor, when I saw that magazine's contributor box, that I had to be in that magazine. Because Mick Stoll wrote for that magazine and Vaginal Davis wrote for that magazine.
Right.
And I thought, that's a cool magazine.
This is company I want to keep.
These are people I want to be in the same magazine with.
Right.
So I wrote, I sent writing samples to that magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got called back 2 days after I mailed them. Like, they went to the mailbox in Los Angeles of this magazine, and the very next day, the editor called me and said, you're going to write for my magazine.
Yes. She wanted you to be her protege,
here's the thing about, this story of magical job getting.
it was the 90s.
That never happens. That never, ever does that happen. The reason I can tell that story 15 years later is because it's like seeing a unicorn.
Well, it's also worth mentioning this was a non-paying gig.
Doesn't matter.
Those still come along.
Those are still ubiquitous.
Yeah. This was a non-paying gig on paper.
This job paid in so many other ways.
Right.
And when people tell you now that jobs pay in exposure, that's some
bunk.
That's a lot of malarkey.
Hooey.
A lot of baloney.
As our friend James Rocky likes to say, I'm from Canada, and all exposure gives you, it leads to is death.
Death, yeah. But this was a really good thing. Like, this introduced me to tons of people, and I wound up at a lot of cool restaurants and gallery openings and stuff.
Sarah Jessica Parker pretended to read your article.
Sarah Jessica Parker pretended to read my article on TV. Yeah. So that, you know, that's what journalism used to be like.
Mm.
You could write for magazines. Sometimes people would just pluck you right out of nowhere and let you write for a magazine.
And look at you now.
Look at me now. Barely employed.
And yet, co-host of this smash hit podcast.
Is it a smash?
It's a mega podcast.
I think we're like a fender bender hit. Like that little bump when someone comes up behind you like, oh, sorry, man. I accidentally let my foot off the brake at the red light and I rolled into you a tiny... Like that's...
It's a nudge of a podcast.
Yes. Yes.
a tiny shove.
One where... Apparently, I dominate you.
Oh, we're going to talk about this already. Okay. Yeah, so, you know, we have been asking for some time now. We always ask that, please, if you are a fan of this show, to leave us a review on iTunes, because that's how people find the show. And it's part of the whole crazy iTunes algorithm. And you know, the more reviews you have and the better reviews you have, then the better placement that you get on their, like, podcast page and whatever. And we have gotten a lot of 5-star reviews from so many of you, and we're very grateful for that.
We love those. Those are the only ones we want.
We did recently, however, receive a 3-star review.
And that's essentially failing.
And I thought to myself, 3 stars. What could we possibly have done to have merited that kind of rating?
Here, I'm going to read it.
And then I found out.
I'm going to read it.
Go on.
This is from Joe. Mm-hmm. Joe, who hates me and who doesn't listen to the show anymore.
You drove him away.
Because of me.
You drove him away.
Here's the review. This is a film review podcast done by a couple, Dave White and Alonzo Duralde, both of whom are professional film critics. The format is a casual conversation between the two men wherein they review movies each has seen the previous week. For the most part, they offer interesting and humorous insights, and their affection for films and each other is clear.
Oh.
It's especially good when they include a guest. However, 2 things eventually influenced me to drop the show after listening for about 6 months. 1, the episodes tend to be long, sometimes clocking in at 90 minutes. I blame that's your fault.
I've had more positive feedback like than negative.
You like
about
to jaw on and on and on.
Not so, because read on.
2, White tends to dominate and talk over his husband. Case in point, Duralde sees a movie that White hasn't. Instead of the conversation focusing on Duralde's view, it is dominated by how and why Dave didn't see the movie and or how he would like to see it. This is unfortunate, given that Duralde has some great things to share when given a chance.
Well, I hope we've all learned something today. And by we've all, I mean you.
Here's what I've learned. Joe hates me and has a crush on you. And what, so he wants me out of the way. And he wants me out of the picture.
What role did you play so that he in all this? Maybe it's not everyone else's fault. Maybe you are a bully and a domineering conversationalist who yakety-yaks all over me when I have something to say.
Maybe.
I will
take this constructive criticism under consideration.
Yeah, take the note. Take the notes, is what I'm saying here. Back me up on this, listeners.
No, don't back him up.
It can't just be this guy.
No, it is only him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a delight.
We lost a listener because of you.
We have dozens of other listeners.
And one listener and they still love us. Is a significant percentage of the audience of this program. You all count. You're all special to us. Maybe we can get him back one day when you've learned to shut it.
I'm very sorry, Joe, that I ruined the podcast for you by being better than Alonzo Duralde at talking.
Give us another chance.
And I'll try to be better at...
Dave will put more of a sock in it.
I'll try to be better at talking less interestingly, just like Alonzo Duralde.
Oh, my God. You don't get it,
do you? You just don't get it, do you?
Mr. Jones.
Someone says that to... who is it that says that to someone in The Best of Me?
Oh, I didn't see it.
It's a stock sentence that you hear in every movie,
right?
And one of the people, I can't remember now. I wrote it down. But one of the people,
like the Rotten Tomatoes show, would have done a montage of people just saying that over and over.
Yes.
Again.
Somebody says to somebody in The Best of Me, "You just don't get it, do you?" And I was like, "He probably doesn't." You're going to have to explain it to him.
We have a great deal of ground to cover. Why don't you talk about The Best of Me since you saw it and I didn't? And I won't interrupt you having not seen the film because that would be rude and gauche.
Here's the thing, though. I kind of think it's cool when you interrupt me because then it becomes like this chaotic sort of conversation.
Tell it to Joe.
Mix it up. I know Joe didn't like it. I've already apologized once to Joe. How many times can I say I'm sorry?
Not enough. Ever. Seriously. Best of me. Go.
Okay, so James Marsden and some dude who plays him when he's young, mm-hmm. and Michelle Monaghan, Monaghan, and a young woman who plays Michelle Monaghan when she is young. In the 90s, when everyone's listening to Soul Asylum and
the Third Eye Blind,
Goo Goo Dolls, and Whoop, There It Is. They
do they do that in the movie?
Yeah, they meet and they fall in love when they're young, and he's, you know, a very good boy and very smart, but he's from the wrong side of the tracks, and his family's a lot of trash, and they make drugs, and they're criminals, and they're abusive to him. They beat him all the time. He's abused, and he runs away from home, and he goes to live with Major Dad. So, Gerald McRaney. And Gerald McRaney is just this, you know, old guy who lives in town, who's a widower, and he doesn't have any kids. And so the kid who will grow up to be James Marsden, he hides out in the guy's shed. And his family comes to get him, and they beat him up. And then they... he has to go live in the house with Major Dad, and then he grows up to be James Marsden, and she grows up to be Michelle Monaghan, and they've gone their separate ways. They were young lovers, but they went their separate ways. But then Major Dad dies because he's 90 or whatever, and he stipulates that they both have to come back to spread his ashes and to clean up the house and get it ready to be sold and all this kind of stuff. So,
or else what?
Well, they love him. He's their surrogate father.
I see, okay.
Well, he's James Marsden's surrogate father. Right. And her, like, she loved him too because he was such a good dude.
You know? Gotcha.
So they go back and they meet and they're like, oh, once we were in love and then I went off to prison because I accidentally killed somebody while defending us from... I'm sorry, here come all the spoilers, by the way. I'm going to spoil this all the way I did Ghost Wife. A superior film, by the way.
Of a Nicholas Sparks
yes.
book. Does he write a lot of letters in prison by chance?
There are a couple letters.
Okay.
In this movie, but not the
reams not of the correspondence we've come to expect.
Not
from
the
Nicholas
Peeps
Sparks.
Diary level sort of
epistolary
you know,
novel yeah. of Nicholas Sparks.
The Peeps Diary, y'all. You should check that out.
Peeps.
Yeah. P E P Y S.
Yes.
Yeah. Peepees. So the
Boswell.
So, James Marsden, when he was a teenager, he accidentally killed somebody in a brawl with his own family because they were trying to kill him. And so he goes to prison, he gets out and he goes to work on an oil rig, but he saves some people's lives when the oil rig explodes because he's such a good dude.
He's an X-Man, after all.
Yeah. And, he's the kind of guy who, when everyone else is clocking out and yabba-dabba-doing because the bird is blowing its steam, he's sitting there on the rig still reading a Stephen Hawking book. Like, he's serious. Like, he's a major... He's an intellect.
Does he have
he's
one,
hot.
Does he have, like, beautifully distressed flannel shirts?
Heart of gold, he does. And he has a sweet Chevy pickup that is old.
Always.
It's not crazy vintage like the ones you see in other Nicholas Sparks films. Mm-hmm. Like, I think even they realized, okay, this has become a cliche. So they gave him one that's sort of like 80s era, which is still a cool old pickup truck to have.
Like a rock.
Yeah, it's like a rock. So, they meet again, and they fall in love again, and she's unhappy because her husband's an alcoholic, and he's not abusive, he's just a jerk. And he's bored
Played
with
by
her.
Anybody?
He's bored, some dude. He's bored with her, and he's, he doesn't treat her like you would treat Michelle Monaghan if you were married to her.
Like gold.
Like gold, yeah. And so, so she also has a kid who's 18, and she had another kid, but that kid died of cancer. Part of Major Dad's estate is going to the Pediatric Cancer Fund because of her, and they fall in love, but then his family comes back into the picture, and they try to stir up some more trouble. Trouble comes stirring up again, and they kill James Marsden. And so... The minute they kill James Marsden, her son is involved in a car accident and he's a heart transplant. And they...
You are not making this up.
They give him James Marsden's heart, and then a year later, the kid goes to Michelle Monaghan and goes, "Hey, Mom, guess what? That heart that I got, he's from that dude. I think you know him." And she's like, "Yes, I do. Let me tell you about him." Because they were, you know, teen lovers.
I don't want to see a movie about organ transplants that is not directed by Pedro Almodovar. I'm just going to put that out there right now.
And a year later, she is divorced.
Alcoholic
dude. And you know they're unhappy right from the get-go because they have a dual-lit toaster.
Explain why that means they're unhappy.
It's the world's most expensive toaster.
Uh-huh.
That you, when you have to substitute material possessions for love... You don't like if you're in a Nicholas Sparks movie and you have a dual lit toaster, you're not living an authentic life.
Oh, so if you had a sweet ass vintage pickup truck, however, okay, I get it.
Yeah, and you live in sort of a distressed, charming, sun dappled environment
with a like a wood beam house with a patio.
Yeah,
a
porch,
with a
swing and you know, always a pie, bacon,
and fireworks.
Yeah. But if you live in a sweet, you know, sort of like clean, very organized home, gleaming appliances,
you're sleeping with the enemy.
You're dead.
Yeah.
Or at least in your soul.
Right.
You're dead. So, so there's some kissing in the rain.
Mm, naturally.
There's some dudes taking off their shirts, all absy and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
There's some wet t-shirts on the lady.
Sure.
Dunking in the creek. They just jump in the...
On the crick.
In the, yeah, they and I, here's the thing. Here's why it's the worst. They have really nice sort of moments together.
Mm-hmm.
Monaghan and Marsden. They're both real actors.
Yes.
And so they have, you know, they're trying to give you something.
They're no Julianne Hough and
Josh
Duhamel, but you do what you can.
But all they have to give you is this sort of mooning kind of, you know, we love each other and let's touch each other tenderly and stuff like that. For a Nicholas Sparks movie to really shine, it can't just have a lot of dumb coincidences. It has to have...
Spectacularly dumb coincidences.
Spectacularly dumb coincidences and outlandish things that are supernatural that could never happen in the world. AKA a ghost wife.
Yes.
And I will always be true to ghost wife. You never forget your first love. And so, even though I had seen all the other Nicholas Sparks movies before Ghost Wife, Ghost Wife remains my favorite. The Notebook doesn't count because it's legitimately good.
I see.
I
think the only one I've seen is Knights in Rodanthe.
With Viola Davis as Rachel True saying, How are you doing?
Exactly. If you did not catch our Rachel True episode last week, it's, I have to say, one of our best. You really should check it out.
Because of her.
Yeah, we didn't do
anything. She's a pistol. Like, she just would... Yeah, she was always in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't even see the movie. She's gonna talk.
Yeah, she was a contributor.
She's the best.
Yeah.
The end. At the end of the movie, he gives himself the best of him, his heart to the son. So I guess technically, what she could do then is form an incestuous relationship with her son.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, is she gonna be like putting her ear to his chest a lot? Like, what is that? Where's that going exactly?
You know it.
Directed by Michael Hoffman, who made one of my very favorite movies of all time.
And he got a job. He got a job.
Yeah. That movie would be Some Girls, by the way, if you were wondering. Okay,
Some Girls is a very nice movie.
It is. Yeah. We are going to talk about Birdman, starring Michael Keaton as Harvey Birdman, attorney at law, next week, because Dave hasn't seen it yet. But we have plenty to catch up. We're still doing the catch-up.
We're still catching up.
Oh, dude, you know what we didn't write down that we have to talk about today?
What?
Left Behind!
Oh, that's right. Well, the reason I forgot to write it down is because it's boring.
I already forgot we saw it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it, because... People have been clamoring to know what we thought about Left Behind.
Yeah.
And we also have not gotten to Addicted yet, but we are going
to... We're going to see Addicted. But it seemed morally wrong to go to see the garbagey black movie when there was a good black movie that came out this week.
Right.
And so
we'll be talking about that later in the program. But yeah.
Like, we only had time for one film to catch up on yesterday, and we picked Dear White People.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, Left Behind. Okay, so if you recall, there was a series of very popular books about the tribulation time and about the 7 years that would elapse between the God's faithful being called up to heaven and the Antichrist taking over and the world being destroyed. Because, you know, if you are a Christian, what could thrill you more than knowing that you are covered and reading about how everyone else is going to suffer horribly? Because what could be more compassionate than
as
that?
As Bibbs called it, Gottenfreude.
Gottenfreude, exactly. Well, good on you, Bibbs. So, the first time around this got made into a film was in 2006?
The first Left Behind?
Uh-huh.
It was like 2001 or 2.
Oh, maybe so. Okay. Anyway, a while ago, starring the redoubtable Kirk Cameron. A
long time ago.
And now they're doing it again. They have rebooted the franchise and somehow upgraded from Kirk Cameron to Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage. But whereas the first movie was all about the United Nations and the Antichrist and the one world government, this one's about landing a plane.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It's about landing a plane.
Yeah.
It's sort of the dull Irwin Allen version of this story. So Nicolas Cage is a pilot who is considering adultery with a stewardess who is busting out of her she was sewn into it blouse.
Yep.
Because his wife
they tart her all up and she doesn't even know he's married.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to dislike her because she wears tight shirts or something.
Well, you know, because she was still willing to sleep with him out of wedlock. So, you know, that makes her a harlot right there.
The Lord won't mind.
So Nicolas Cage is considering cheating on his wife, played by Leah Thompson?
Yeah.
Leah Thompson, because Leah Thompson is born again, and all she talks about now is Jesus, 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 and somehow...
And no one's ever annoyed by that.
Oh, no, never. How dare he? And so his daughter, played by Cassie Thompson, who's also a little annoyed by mom's new Jesus talk, comes home to visit, but he jets off to London instead. And then the rapture happens. While she is hugging her younger brother, suddenly she has a handful of clothes in her arms.
Right.
And meanwhile, on Nicolas Cage's plane, the co-pilot and the other stewardess have poofed up along with all the babies. And a big fat guy sitting next to Tristan from Gilmore Girls.
Mm-hmm.
What's that guy's name? Chad Michael Murray.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan Sparks is having a freak out. And there's, you know, no one's responding from mission control or from the tower. And the runways are clogged. And... seriously, like the plane business takes up about the first 15 minutes of the first Left Behind movie, and it's the whole movie this time. It's got some of the worst looting I've ever seen in a film in terms of just the worst portrayal of looting.
If by worst, you mean the best.
Big fat guys running out of a mall with three teal prom dresses on hangers in their grasp. And
finally, I'm free! There's no more judgment. I can wear dresses every day for the rest of my life. These three teal dresses are all I need. Tonight.
I swear there is...
I'll be back to the mall tomorrow to continue looting.
That's right, because maybe I'm a fall. There's one single television that everybody seems to be stealing.
This television. This guy runs past the camera like three times in three different locations. Like, he can't run far enough with that TV in his hands.
This is the level of incompetence of this movie. They obviously never had Nicolas Cage and Leah Thompson on the same day. So the family picture that everybody has, it's either like on their wall or in his wallet, is so awkwardly photoshopped.
Oh, yeah.
It's an embarrassment. But the whole movie is really
an embarrassment.
It's just boring. And, you know, it's no The Identical, people. I'm sorry.
The Identical is a flabbergasting delight. And Left Behind is just...
stodgy.
Is just dull.
Yeah.
Like, I was really looking forward to this. I mean, what scenario... You had one job left behind, starring Nicolas Cage, and that was to be amazing.
It was to be a rapture movie with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
But Nicolas Cage never goes to the Bad Lieutenant place in this one. Like, he is playing it very straightforwardly. Yeah. And who wants that?
Nobody wants. Ain't nobody want that.
No.
The
The he's never covered in bees.
No, know? Yeah, it's really, really not even. It's not even fun. Like there are moments that are fun. The looting, the crowd problems in this film. The mayhem is ineptly staged, choreographed, directed. Whoever was in charge of background didn't know how to do their job.
No.
And the reason we know this is because we saw it with Gary Cotti, and his job is background for a lot of things.
Yes. I asked him specifically because I was tipped off early on. The extras were terrible.
And so I'm truly disappointed in yet another crappy Christian movie. But
it's not even like offensively stupid except for the Muslim guy who doesn't get raptured because, you know, sorry, you joined the wrong gang.
Right.
And the really obnoxious Christian lady at the beginning who gets all in Chad Michael Murray's face about, you know, the end times. I was hoping there'd be a scene later on where we find out she didn't get raptured.
No, instead
for being such a bee.
Instead we're given a pastor who didn't get raptured.
Right.
Because that becomes the most interesting aspect of the film.
That they barely touch upon. They get one scene and then they're done.
Right.
He pops up more in the original too, right? That character?
I don't know.
I seem to recall he does.
I don't remember. But if he pops up in the original or the book, which I will never read.
No.
I wonder how that character is explained. Actually, maybe I will read the book if I want to know how that character is explained. Because
if you find it like a swap meet so that no pastor, money actually goes into the pocket.
I'm sure it's a penny on Amazon. The pastor who does not get raptured says, this is the only explanation you get from him, says, I said the right words, but I didn't believe it. And I thought, but wait a second, you're a pastor. Have you been actually faking people out this whole time? And if so...
Are you Elmer Gantry?
Yeah. If so, how come you're not more rich? Because that's what they do.
True.
The ones who are truly faking people out are the ones who get... to become bajillionaires.
Major league charlatans.
People like Robert Tilton and...
Jim Baker.
Pat Robertson and Jim Baker. Well, Pat Robertson is a true believer. Jim Baker was a true believer too, but he was a nut job.
Pat Robertson is also a nut job.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. He's also a nut job. But
what's his face?
I'm talking about people like Joel Osteen.
The TBN, the those two.
The Crouches.
The Crouches, yes.
Yeah, I don't know if they really believe anything.
No, they got rich is what I'm saying.
I feel like Joel Osteen is a complete faker.
Oh, yeah, and that other, what's his face? Saddleback.
Yeah.
Rick Warren.
I feel like those guys are complete charlatans because their whole vibe is get money.
Yeah, the prosperity gospel.
And that's what they preach, too. They preach like, you should just be your best and be great and get cash and stuff.
So give it to me.
If this guy wasn't a complete faker, then why was he just a middle-class pastor?
Why is he in suburban Long Island?
And here's what it touches on. As someone who grew up in the conservative evangelical church, it's a thing that they do to make you afraid.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing that they do every so often during revival time, usually. There's always a revival week when there's church every night.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a visiting pastor in whose job is to, like, scare the hell out of you all the time.
Boogity, 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 boogity.
The thing they do, and it's especially effective with young people, teenagers and kids, is this expression. Now, it used to be very popular in the 80s, this expression, when I was a kid. It may not be popular anymore because in spite of what Christians say, their faith
bends with the prevailing...
influenced by trends as well, including trends of, you know, speech and behavior. But a thing they used to say back in the day was, do you know that you know? Meaning, you say you're saved, but do you really know that you know you're saved? Are you really... Did you say the words and then it might not have tooken the way you wanted it to or the way God wanted it to? Like, have you fallen short of being an actual good Christian? And if you have, maybe you were never saved at all. Maybe you just said it because, for whatever other reason, and you didn't mean it. And all this time, you've been unsaved. And if Jesus comes back 5 minutes from now, guess what's going to happen to you? They do that to you. And I'm sure they still do that to people. They might not say the whole, do you know that you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that was the expression I heard all the time in the Southern Baptist Church and then in the independent fundamentalist Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
They would say that.
Well, yeah, this movie does not have like the really loony pants, chick track kind of
evangelism. That's God's Not Dead.
Yeah.
God's Not Dead is the chick track.
Right.
And so will be, I'm quite sure, I think it's called A Question of Faith or A Matter of Faith, which is fixing to open here in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a fan of bad Christian movies, 2014 is your year, because holy cow, they are coming like tennis balls coming out of the thing there that shoots them.
Sadly, Christian Mingle did not open within 100 miles of us, so
no,
we are not going to get to see
that. It did
not.
It opened in 8 cities nationwide.
Yeah.
Which...
two of them in California, but just like way up.
Which hurts me.
Yeah.
It needs to be on demand or on DVD really quickly so that I can enjoy Christian Mingle.
The porn parody could be called Christian Comingle.
And there was an article this week, Salon or whatever, about,
which I posted on our Facebook page.
And then there was another article somewhere on a Christian blog about how these films are very bad. And if you speak up, if you're a Christian who speaks up about it, you are seen as some sort of heretical person. And here's the problem.
But we get letters from people who are Christians who are like, no, thank you for saying that God's Not Dead is awful. It was awful.
Here's the problem with what happens in the conservative evangelical church. Mm-hmm. And I'm very specific when I say this. Conservative evangelicals. They are the problem. The reason the artistry is lacking in that part of the world is because they drive their artists away. Young. If you are young and artistic in that environment, you are as removed as quickly as you can be removed. Because invariably, what comes with the artistic temperament or the ability to create art that is meaningful is the desire to question.
Right.
And the minute you begin questioning too much, the hammer comes down. Always. Always. I remember this very thing happened to me when I was a kid. If I had too many questions... and you know I have questions.
Always.
About everything, always. I remember being told more than once that my questions were not genuine. They were meant to evade my spiritual responsibilities.
Buh.
Yeah. My questions were all about moving the goalposts. They weren't real questions. Because I had too many of them. And they were too unpleasant. And so
they get rid of the artist and they're left with the guy who makes fireproof.
Exactly. So real artists get kicked out and then that's it. You get these garbagey movies from people who are still in and who are technically almost proficient at a thing.
Right.
And who can gather up the funds.
We still need to watch, with the Christmas season coming up, Last Ounce of Courage.
Last Ounce of Courage, and then the Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas movie.
Oh, yes. That's opening coming in November, we will be
Last
seeing
Last Ounce
that
of
one.
Courage is still streaming on Netflix.
Yes, we'll
get to that.
Yes. Okay, the big movie this weekend is Fury.
Yeah.
Starring Brad Pitt and Shia LaBeouf and Logan Lerman. About tank warfare in the waning days of World War II. It's written directed by David Ayer, who did End of Watch and who wrote Training Day. And it's not super plot heavy. It's kind of a couple of days in this tank. And Logan Lerman is the green recruit who's been in the army for 8 weeks and trained to be a typist and suddenly finds himself stuck in a tank with these guys who've been doing it maybe a little longer than they should have at this point. They're all a little fried. You know, it's intense. And I was saying on What the Flick that, you know, it didn't necessarily start with Saving Private Ryan, but it's certainly part of that ongoing thing of, like, let's stop romanticizing World War II. Like, it was a war like any other war, and it was horrifying, and awful, awful things happened, and it was dirty and bloody and nightmarish, and, you know, it doesn't matter how great the Andrew sisters were, like, World War II was a hellhole, and
right. Here
are movies that are going to show you that. But then you made the point about how war pictures always sort of reflect in one way or the other where we are as a culture in terms of our own, you know, military prowess and our place in the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think. I don't know. I don't, you know, this is just a, I haven't done research. But it seems to me that in times of peace and relative calm,
we ask harder questions.
We ask harder questions in our war movies. And in times of anxiety, we don't. Now, that is not, there are so many exceptions to what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the 50s, in times of peace, there were lots of nostalgic movies being made about World War II.
Right.
And World War II is the great big exception because over the past, you know, 70 years, we have decided as a culture that World War II was the last war we can all feel good about.
Right.
And so World War II movies tend to be about heroism. They tend to be about a way that we can win.
Mm-hmm.
So if during a time of anxiety in the culture we have a World War II movie, often it's a movie about how heroic everyone was.
Yeah.
Even Saving Private Ryan, which sure, was a brutal, you know, kind of film, but it was about goodness.
Nobody makes a Vietnam movie to make you feel good about military action.
Except Good Morning Vietnam, which was...
But even that one questioned the war. It just, you know...
A little bit.
Yeah.
It mostly was a vehicle for Robin Williams to act crazy.
Basically, yes.
And so, you know, and more exceptions, during the Iraq War, we had a lot of films about Iraq. Nobody went to see them because they were all hard-hitting kind of films about what are we doing there? Why are we there? This is all based on lies. What's going on? And all the documentaries and all the narrative films about Iraq that came out during the Iraq War, mm-hmm. they all tanked. Nobody went to see them.
The docs did okay.
The docs did okay, but yeah, critically.
Yeah.
Yeah. But ain't nobody went to see those movies. Now we have... We're still sort of in the post-haze of Iraq and Afghanistan. We have a World War II movie that you would think... would be about heroism. And it's just about the grunting grossness of everything.
Yeah.
It's about these guys being turned into monsters.
Yeah.
Now, it has a certain element of, you know, the canonization of the martyr, is what I would
say. Sure, yeah.
But not entirely. It also has a strange middle section. That reminds me of that part in Apocalypse Now
with the French plantation.
When they all go to the French plantation.
Yeah, Christy and I talked about that on What the Flick this week.
Oh, did you? Yes. I haven't watched that yet. Well, they stop at this sort of, it's not a farmhouse, but it's just
they're
home.
They're in a village, yeah. It's a home with where these two German women are living.
And for a good long stretch of the film,
they have lunch.
Logan Lerman and Brad Pitt stop off, and they seek to become normal for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the company of these women, they get cleaned up, they have a meal, they're nice to the ladies. Logan Lerman
loses his virginity,
or at least has sex. We don't know if he's a virgin or not, do we? Did they say he was?
I think he is.
And it's about time, because he's already 14. So,
as I've been saying, they cast Logan Lerman so that somebody could make Shia LaBeouf look rugged.
But their attempt at normalization is disrupted by the other guys from the tank crew,
right.
Whose coarseness and drunkenness will not be deterred.
Yeah,
like they are gonna do their thing,
and they clearly want no part of it. Like they're in the war mindset and they want to stay there.
Yeah.
Well,
to leave it, they have to start thinking about other stuff.
Right. Yeah, they're not ready to do that. I mean, there's a lot of interesting ideas. This isn't a great movie, but it's a solid movie.
I think it's very good.
It's very good. It does what it sets out to do in a lot of ways. It's interesting. It's compelling to watch. It's unpredictable.
It's not visually gorgeous or anything. Like, there's no...
sweeping...
There's no...
interesting...
There's no aesthetic going on that makes you think, oh, this they really care about, you know...
Composition
and stuff like that. It's
functional.
But it's a gut punchy kind of movie where there's a blunt force to David Ayer's films.
Yeah, it's very violent.
He's not interested so much in making things look nice. He's interested in visceral reaction.
And, I mean, the people around us, like the I was sitting next to these two sort of early 20s girls, and they were just like...
Well, the violence is horror movie level gore. Yeah. Yeah, there's nasty stuff to look at.
It is war appropriate, but it is war appropriate. You know.
So, I like this.
No, I like it too. I like I said, it's not great, but it's very good.
And I like Shia LaBeouf.
He's good. The whole cast is good. Michael Pena's in it, and John.
It's fun to crap on him right now, but he's
fine.
I don't think that his personal life and his film life are. They seem to be two different worlds.
Yeah.
Like
he was good in Infomaniac, I think.
Yeah.
Who's the other guy? I always forget his name. The one from Walking Dead. John...
Bernthal?
John Bernthal, yeah. Is it John Bernthal?
Yes, and he's one of those actors whose face changes every time you see him.
Yeah, he played De Niro's son in Grudge Match.
Yeah.
Or Stallone. Stallone's son. Somebody's son.
And I hope you didn't see it.
Yeah, no kidding.
That was... piece of garbage.
But yeah, check out Fury. It is well done.
Book of Life.
Not a movie that I had high expectations for.
Me neither.
And I was really charmed by it.
Me too.
Why don't you tell me what it's about?
That's about a lot.
Yeah, there's a ton of plot in this movie.
It begins with a tour guide leading children through a museum.
Right, and explaining to them what the day...
Through the backside of the museum.
Right.
Because these kids are rebellious and rowdy, and they want to see something different and new.
So she shows us a diorama that explains the Day of the Dead. And in doing so, tells a story about... There's the land of the remembered, which is ruled over by La Muerte. And then there is the land of the forgotten that is ruled over by Xibalba.
Yeah.
And they have a bet where they find these three kids, you know, like this girl and two boys who are best friends. And they bet over which boy the girl will marry when they all grow up. And the girl grows up to be fiercely independent. And one of the boys grows up to be a bullfighter, although he really wants to be a singer. And the other boy grows up to be a great military man like his father. And he is given a medal by Xibalba that makes him basically invincible and immortal, which explains his prowess. And things play out from there. There's a lot of stuff going on, but it's easy to follow once you're in it. And I found it really cool to look at, and really kind of takes advantage of the sort of wildly colorful aspects of what we've come to know as the Day of the Dead celebration.
It's also musical.
Yes, the songs aren't so great.
The songs are fine.
They're fine. They're not memorable.
They're not super memorable songs, but they push the plot forward.
Sure.
And they do a thing that I really am pleased by. They nod to the third act need for children's films to have a big war. But do their best to ignore it as much as they can and divert it into some other direction.
Right.
And that's the same thing that happens in How to Train Your Dragon 2, which is another great animated feature.
And we'll be talking about Big Hero 6 in a couple of weeks as well.
So you've got a plot line that, in order to defeat the big bad at the end, they begin talking about forgiveness. And that always, pricks up my ears, because I think, what, we're not going to have a giant battle where everyone annihilates each other? Someone's going to sing a song about forgiveness? That's fascinating and interesting and different.
Well, they kind of do both, actually.
They do a little bit of both. I understand. Yes, they do. I'm not saying they don't have the fight, but they don't dive in gung-ho without thinking.
No. There's...
And anytime that happens in a kid movie, where anytime there is something different going on in the kid movie, I'm really happy.
And I love a kid movie about death.
Yeah,
a kid movie about sort of not about ancestor veneration. We don't get a lot of that.
Yeah. So this is a really smart. It's witty. It's really funny.
It's clever.
It's sweet and playful and colorful. There's a lot of good jokes. A lot of cool. Fast-paced, snappy sort of editing going on with the punchlines. If you're an adult with no kids, you'll see it anyway.
Yeah,
I'm into it.
Me too. There are a couple. Should I go into the ones that I've seen that you haven't without you cutting me off?
I'll try.
I'll be quick. There's St. Vincent.
I'm still sorry, Joe.
There's St. Vincent
please come back to me, Joe.
With Bill Murray as crotchety old man with heart of gold melted by adorable child who moves in next door with single mom Melissa McCarthy. Throw in pregnant stripper Naomi Watts with heart of gold. I hated this movie. This movie made me angry. Like, I have been reading reviews that are like, well, it's hokey, but Bill Murray's so great. Or, oh, it's so effective, you just kind of forgive it, even though you know it's predictable, blah, blah.
No forgiveness.
No. Infuriating. I'm tempted to say one of the worst movies of this year.
Because
made me so mad. It's so hokey and phony baloney. And Bill Murray is fine. He's not doing anything special. And there are so many Oscar clip moments for him in this film. I'm going to spoil this one thing. Midway through the film, he has a stroke. So that we can then get the, you know, obligatory learning how to talk again montage.
Right.
Ugh. Ugh. Don't go see this movie. It's awful. You can also skip Kill the Messenger, starring Jeremy Renner as a real-life reporter who broke the story about the U.S. government... God, it's been a while since, you know, what thing did they do? It's something about selling drugs.
Some and things.
Giving guns to the Contras or something. I don't even remember now. It's been, I've seen a lot of movies since then. But he broke a real story. And then, of course, what happens is the story breaks. And then suddenly he becomes the story. And his flaws get multiplied a thousand times. And no one can talk anymore about the allegations that he's making because they're too busy talking about his methods or his this or his that. And, you know, and it's BS and it's how the media works. And you know, it's what Chuck Todd does. You know, it's what all these lamos do. And
is Chuck Todd a lamo?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he is?
Oh, yeah. He's totally, like, carrying water for Mitch McConnell these days.
Oh, okay.
Anyway... Again, you know, I get this from people where they say, oh, well, you didn't, you know, I don't, because I'm an atheist and I hate all Christian movies, and because I'm gay, I'm going to like all gay movies, or because I'm a lefty, I'm going to like all lefty movies. This is a lefty movie. Didn't like it. Your message movie has to have more for me than The Message, and it's tedious. And, you know, there's this a terrific cast. You know, his wife is played by Rosemary DeWitt. You know, Oliver Platt is in it. And, I mean, just like this long list as long as your arm of, like, really great character actors have about one or two scenes. But it's just dreary, and it's like every other whistleblower movie you've ever seen. And the guy himself... when you see him in the credits, seems like a much more regular guy than the sort of giant mustachey aviator sunglasses caricature that Jeremy Renner is turning him into.
Right.
It's a weird, there's a lot of weird choices there. Yeah, not a film that worked for me at all.
Are you done?
I'm done.
I didn't want to talk over you and dominate you. It's so easy to do.
Yeah. Whiplash.
Oh, yeah, we both saw Whiplash.
We both saw Whiplash.
I caught up on Whiplash.
Yes.
It is about Miles Teller as a jazz drummer who goes to a conservatory to study with J.K. Simmons, who is the meanest jazz
Taskmaster
alive. He is the great hate Santini of jazz.
He is the Arlie Ermey of bebop.
Yeah, and sadistic.
Yeah,
like and playing all kinds of mind games with Miles Teller, and Miles Teller just grunts and takes it. And the film is about their relationship. I don't want to spoil what happens in this movie because I want people to experience it.
I will say that the film ends in a drum solo that is one of the most exciting things I've seen in a movie all year.
Yeah, I agree with that.
What I like about this movie, and you may disagree with me, is that I think that the movie leaves it up to you to decide whether or not to agree with what the characters think about how great artists are formed. Because the J.K. Simmons character is basically like, yeah, talent, that's great. But you have to be rigorous and disciplined, and you basically have to have somebody, you know, he keeps citing the example of somebody throwing a cymbal at the head of Charlie Parker.
Right.
And that's what made Charlie Parker great, you know, right. was the threat of violence.
The threat of decapitation.
The threat of decapitation.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and you know, Simmons follows through with that and clearly believes it. And the thing is, the movie never tells you one way or the other, oh, he's right or oh, he's wrong. I think the movie kind of says, well, he might have a point. He might also be just a sick, sadistic puppy.
Psychopath, yeah.
What do you think, audience? You know, I kind of liked not having that answered for me. That was my takeaway, anyway, was that it wasn't answered for you.
Without giving away what happens, I will say that the thing that loses me somewhat halfway through the film is a series of improbable events.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always bothered by that when it happens in a film that has, up to that point,
practiced verisimilitude,
bent over backwards to give me what the movie wants me to think of as reality.
Right.
His real life doesn't have outlandish event piled on top of outlandish event, unless it's a really, really strange day.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of took me out a little bit. You know, the minute this one big thing happens, I thought, oh, come on. Don't do this to me. Don't start down this road.
I kind of thought, to me, that part felt intentional. That felt like that these characters have been driven to this point that in any other movie you'd think, oh, well, this is, now things stop. No, they don't, you know.
Yeah.
I felt like that was intentional.
I don't know. But I'm still grappling with that.
Fair enough. No.
Otherwise, I think it's a very good movie.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's definitely worth seeing. Both lead performances are really terrific. You know, I mean, J.K. Simmons is the more obviously sort of impressive one and the more quantifiable one, but Miles Teller is terrific as well.
I think Miles Teller is the one.
He's operating with more shading.
He's got more. He's doing more unusual lifting.
Yeah,
in this movie. All right.
What else is on the list?
That's it.
Really?
Yeah. Oh wait, No, it's not.
No, it's
Dear
not.
White People.
Dear White People. Doi.
What you are about to hear is not a review of Dear White People.
No.
We are not going to tell you anything that is wrong with Dear White People. We are not going to review Dear White People. We are going to cheerlead for Dear White People. And the reason we're going to do that is because we know the writer and director, Justin Simeon, and he is a very good dude.
And the editor, Philip Bartel, is a friend of mine.
I don't know Philip Bartel at all.
Really?
I don't think I've even met him.
Oh, good heavens.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
But that's not important to me. What is important to me is that we have both known Justin for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be my very favorite publicist at Paramount Pictures.
Yes.
Now he is doing the thing he was meant to do.
Yes, he is a filmmaker.
Meant to be a filmmaker, and that is what he has done. He has made a funny, smart movie about race.
Yes.
And that is a thing that we don't get in the world very often.
No, we don't even get dumb films about race. We don't get films about race generally speaking. And this is a really intelligent one and provocative. And I love a movie where I feel like it's the conversation that the people that it's about wouldn't have around me. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I love a movie that's like what women talk about to other women when men aren't around, or what gay people talk about to other gay people when straight people aren't around, or what black people talk about to other black people when white people aren't around. I love that in a movie.
Yes.
I'm totally fascinated in that stuff.
Yeah.
And this movie to me felt like things that black people talk about that they don't talk about to white people.
Right.
But not in a way that felt didactic or inorganic. You know, it works into the plot really well, I think.
I think that the film stops to deliver speeches, but I super love those speeches. And so that's fine with me.
And now I know what oofta means.
Yeah, I had no idea what that was before. It looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's being sold as something other than what it is.
Yeah, it's not quite the satire that the marketing campaign would have you
believe.
It's not
this bomb-throwing, like, furious comedy.
No.
It is, in fact, full of, you know, straight-up dramatic situations that are leavened with comedy.
Mm-hmm.
A comedy drama, or dramedy, perhaps.
If you will.
There's a lot of serious, you know, stuff being discussed. So it's not, you know...
And the characters matter. They're not just there as sort of mouthpieces for different points of view or for whatever. Like, they're going through their own stuff that isn't necessarily directly related to what you think the plot is about.
The lead young woman, Tessa Thompson, is that her name? She was terrific. I loved all those... She has so many Denise Huxtable outfits that she wears, and it's the best. And I never remember the guy who's from Everybody Hates Chris.
He's got three names.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm going to pause because it's embarrassing that we can't remember his name. Tyler James Williams. Sorry about that. from Everybody Hates Chris and Unaccompanied Minors.
I love his reactive face.
Mm.
He can get more laughs out of just reacting to what other people are doing than a lot of comic actors
can. Yeah.
And I spent 60% of the film looking at the woman who plays Coco and thinking to myself the following. Oh, gosh, who are you? I know who you are. I've seen you before. I know who you are. I've seen you before. Ugh, this is driving me crazy. Who are you? I've seen you before. And then I almost gasped out loud when it came to me in the theater. I thought... Oh, God, it's Dawn from Mad Men.
Yes. I recognized her. Because I'd also seen her in
The First Time
They
I've
Came
ever,
Together.
The first time I ever saw her was dressed as Dawn from Mad Men. And she looks like 1968.
Right. And you carry that with you.
I carry that. That's everybody on Mad Men looks like it's the 60s.
Right.
I don't know what those people look like outside of Mad Men.
It's like when you see the people from Downton Abbey. Like when you see Mrs. Patmore in the modern day. You're like, what?
The day I saw Christina Hendricks at Crate and Barrel, it took me three times looking at her like, oh, is that someone I know? And I was like, oh, I'll just take a step forward and be like, oh, hey, hi. And then I stepped back and I was like, no, I don't know her. She's an actress. Wait, who is she? Who is she? Who is she? And then I thought, oh, it's Joan. and that was... Nuts.
I have to bring up, there's a side character who's a producer of a reality TV show who is played by Malcolm Barrett, and I was convinced it was Dave Chappelle. And Dave...
Because you're racist.
And Dave says I'm racist. So then I go to Google.
You're so racist.
Go to Google, listeners, and type in Malcolm Barrett, Dave Chappelle, and you will see a series of articles
about
like...
how they look alike.
Malcolm Barrett talks about how looking just like Dave Chappelle has been great for his career. Dave Chappelle's look-alike, Malcolm Barrett. So shut up, Dave White.
Also, you're super racist.
I know. Not at all. Anyway, so yeah, dear white people, we can't really review it because we know people involved.
But here's, I'll tell you this, if we didn't like it, we just wouldn't talk about it
exactly,
at all.
Exactly, right. I always say that when we talked about Space Station 76 and whatever else. Yeah,
right.
We would very politely deflect, but no.
It would not exist in the world, in the universe of this podcast, the film would not exist.
Exactly. So I hate to tip our hands on this, but if you make a movie and you never hear us talk about it, it means we didn't like it. But we did like this one, and it's really smart, and it is going to be expanding. Apparently had a really impressive opening weekend.
It had a kick-ass per screen this weekend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
11 theaters nationwide.
Something like that, yeah. So
it's not playing many places yet.
But it'll be making its way near you, and you should totally check it out. So well done, you guys. Is that it?
Why don't you do all the things that are advertising for us?
Okay.
The group page and the Poseidon Adventure and the t-shirts and the...
Okay.
And the whatever.
All right. Just as a reminder, we haven't mentioned in a while, we do have the Linoleum Knife group page on Facebook. And we have our Linoleum Knife page on Facebook, which we definitely encourage you to check out and to like. But also check out the Linoleum Knife group page. It's where our listeners can go and chat with each other about movies and other topics. And
about how much you like us and how I don't dominate alone. Alonso.
Uh-huh, and how you do. And then, you know, we chime in occasionally on things as well. But, you know, check it out.
Because I'm really nice.
Our listeners are a diverse and fun group.
And polite.
And you guys can talk to each other about all kind of things. And then, you know, the holiday season is coming up, so you might want to be thinking about giving one of our gorgeous Linoleum Knife t-shirts as a stocking stuffer, available in a variety of sizes. Yeah, and all you have to do is PayPal us $20 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what size you want. It's a Hanes BFT 100% cotton. And also let us know the address where you'd like us to ship it. And then, of course, there is Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, which are the special episodes that we've been selling that are feature-length discussions of films that you can listen to while you're watching the movie on DVD or on streaming, or just listen to it on your own like a regular episode. So far, we have done White Christmas, which it's coming up to, you'll want to watch that again. The Apple, Clue, Two for the Road, Josie and the Pussycats, and we are about to record in the next couple of weeks The Poseidon Adventure, which is one of Dave's favorite movies of all time.
Yes.
As we get closer to that and that one gets available, we'll have an interesting, we'll have an exciting announcement to make about this year's Christmas Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, and we'll tell you more about that in a couple of weeks. Shall I do my DVD pick?
Yes.
While you're vamping over there? Because of Dear White People, it's not an identical film, but it certainly reminded me of it in a lot of ways, from the collegiate setting to the discussions of differences within the black community. Spike Lee's School Days, I think one of his underrated early films. It is a musical. It's an ambitious movie. It doesn't work 100% of the time, but I think that he really is going after a lot of big ideas there, and it's a fascinating film, and I like a lot of the songs, including Da Butt.
That's a great song.
Yes.
Da Butt is a wonderful song.
There is an entire musical number about black women's hair. It's a great movie, I think. It's worth checking out.
I am going to recommend a DVD of a film I have not seen yet, and here's why.
Okay.
It is... I love Cinema Guild.
Hmm.
I love them, love them, love them. Cinema Guild puts out the best films. The best. Well, other people put out some of the best ones too. But Cinema Guild always puts out great films. They always release great films. CinemaGuild.com. It's all one word. You should go there. Here's the problem with the films of Cinema Guild. Every so often, one of them, or more of them, do not come to Los Angeles.
Hmm.
Other than for like a one-night shot at a film festival. They'll play for a week in New York at Film Forum, and then they won't have a Los Angeles play date anywhere. Not at a Lemley Theater. Maybe occasionally farther down the road at CineFamily. But they don't come sometimes. And a film, a Filipino film that I wanted to see all year, called Norte, The End of History.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Filipino reimagining of Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment.
Okay.
Which is apparently astoundingly good.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't come to L.A. Did not play in Los Angeles.
Wait, I thought somebody messaged me about this on Facebook that it was in L.A. this week or something.
This week?
Yeah.
This very week?
I think so, yeah.
All right, I'm going to look it up.
Because that was the first time I'd ever heard of that movie, but it's on DVD now?
It's coming to DVD Tuesday.
Okay, well.
I used it this week, like opened 2 days ago Friday.
I would have to dig up the thing.
I'm going to look it up.
Okay, but nonetheless, it's on DVD Tuesday, so okay. What's it called again?
Norte, The End of History.
Norte, The End of History. Okay, yeah. Cool.
And I'm, you know...
Have they put out the movie, the new Jafar Panahi that we missed because it was here for a week?
I didn't miss it. I saw it.
Oh, okay. Then the one that I missed.
Because I'm so great.
Good for you. Is that on DVD yet? I want to see it.
Not that I know of.
The one with the dog?
Nope.
Huh. Rats.
I'm blanking on the title, but I saw that film.
Good for you.
Perhaps if you think other films are the best films of the year and you haven't seen some of the more important films... Maybe you should come to me and ask for opinions.
Uh-huh, yeah. Maybe you should have my schedule, and then we can talk about what movies that I get to and which ones I don't.
Yeah, that's my rec, because I'm going to watch it. I'm very excited.
All right.
And now, here's some letters We have time for like two letters, and we have to get out of here.
Okay.
We're recording this very late in the afternoon, and I've got dinner to make.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, I made it already. I made the dinner. It was these incredibly elaborate hamburgers.
Yes. Ernest Hemingway's favorite.
Ernest Hemingway's favorite hamburger.
Where'd you find this recipe?
Savour magazine.
Savour.
Say it again.
Savour.
It's French, right?
Yeah.
Say it. Pronounce it for me.
Savour.
Savour.
You're the worst.
Savour. Savour magazine.
You'll find that you're in the rotogravure. Okay.
They had a recipe. Papa Hemingway's Wild West hamburger. Yeah. Apparently it was his favorite hamburger. 15 ingredients. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah, Papa Hemingway's favorite burger for somebody else to make.
15 ingredients in this hamburger. And it's crazy. Like, the number of things that have to... It took me one hour this morning of chopping, grating, mincing, to get all the 15 things into this meat.
16, because then you had to crush a bunch of crackers because it was all too wet.
Yeah, it was still too wet, and I had to crush some saltines in it to sop that up and bind it together. Other people would go with panko breadcrumbs. But you know what panko breadcrumbs taste like?
What?
Little breadcrumbs. You know what crushed up saltines taste like?
Nothing.
Delicious saltine crackers. Salty and good.
Communion.
Yeah. So then I posted the recipe on Twitter with this tweet. I will make a hamburger. It will be good. And nobody got it.
Aww.
Nobody got it.
Boo.
So unhappy with everyone in the world.
This was a good hamburger. This was the best hamburger.
Like, the most maximalist hamburger you can make in the world. Like, how ironic that this is his favorite hamburger.
Well, look, would you like a rare
steak with nothing on it, Papa?
No,
I would like a hamburger with 15 different things in it.
But what he favored in his culinary life was different than what he favored on the page.
Apparently. So that stuff's all mixed up, but now I have to...
Fry them up.
I gotta go grill them up and then make a Caesar salad.
Yes. Okay, well, you're killing time here.
Oh, you're right. I am killing time, aren't I?
Just read the letters.
I'm not killing time. I'm giving added value. I think if you recall the consultation that we recently had with our marketing person.
We're supposed to give added value on Twitter, not in the show.
Oh, we're not?
Yes. I mean, you know.
Look, this is still added value.
The show is already dripping with value.
I guess. This question is for... Alfonso.
Oh, well.
I don't know if he means that or not.
La fucky me.
What?
Oh, sorry, that was...
You're going to have to delete yourself.
I will.
You're going to have to edit yourself.
It's the first time I've ever cursed on the show. It was totally by accident.
I don't know if this person, Ziggy, I don't know if Ziggy means to call you Alfonso as a joke.
Uh-huh.
Or as thinking your name is actually Alfonso.
Heaven only knows.
All right. Why didn't the film noir movie cited in the title of this email... pause, please, so I can go see what the title of the email is. Where did I leave off?
The big combo is the title that you...
The big combo. Find. Why didn't the film noir movie cited in the title of this email... The name of the film is The Big Combo... Make the cut or get an honorable mention in the appendix of your book, 101 Must-See Movies for Gay Men.
People
have a right to know.
There is no appendix to 101 Must-See Movies for Gay Men. I think you're thinking of my Christmas book, which does have an appendix. Because it was 101, and I didn't get to everything. That's the nature of a list book.
He continues.
Sorry, Ziggy.
The internet traffic. The internet traffic about this movie is awash in speculation that the hitmen characters, Fante and Mingo, were supposed to be gay. Mm. Lee Van Cleef is long gone, of course, but Earl Holliman is still with us. Time is running out for some enterprising journalist to ask him if the writer, Philip Yordan, and or director, Joseph H. Lewis, of the picture ever spoke directly with him or Van Cleef about playing it with a queer undertone or not. Did you not do your homework for 101 Must See Movies for Gay Men?
I did so much work for 101 Must See Movies.
Why didn't you include that movie?
Because I understand? Because I did 101.
Well, you need to put it. Have you ever seen The Big Combo?
I have never seen The Big Combo.
All right,
Combo.
You need to put that on your list for 102.
If I ever write another.
Oh, you're going to write 102.
Not yeah, you
no. Oh, yeah.
You're not the boss of me.
I.
Film books.
You're right. I'm not the boss of you.
Stop domineering me.
I'm not dominating you anymore.
Film books.
I give up dominating you.
If Leonard Maltin
interrupting you,
can't publish an annual film
talking
guide
over
anymore,
you, I give it up.
If Leonard Maltin can't publish an annual film guide anymore, there is no hope for the rest of us.
There's plenty of hope for you.
A film research book. A film reference
you
book.
You can do anything you want. You can do anything you set your mind to. You can be a princess or a teacher or a nurse or a...
I am a teacher and a leader. Go on.
Dear Free Will and Ricky Candy Face Mistooks, Sex Happening and Star of YouTube Alonso.
What?
The first one was me and the second one was you.
Is there an and in there somewhere?
And star of YouTube Alonso.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I feel it is worth giving a British perspective on the film Pride to add some context to the film.
Mm.
I do this not only as an Englishman, but also as someone who, according to my mother, was on the Pride Parade at the end of the film as a six-year-old.
Nice!
She says I started out walking before eventually getting tired and finishing the march on the shoulders of several of my mother's gay friends, while my four-year-old brother did the whole thing in his pushchair. It is impossible to underestimate just how devastating Margaret Thatcher's policy of closing the coal pits was to communities in the north of England and the south of Wales. Even now, 30 years later, these towns and villages have never recovered, and unemployment is rife. They say it's grim up north for a reason. Thatcher was so unpopular with these working-class communities that there was a campaign to get Ding Dong the Witch is Dead from The Wizard of Oz to the top of the charts in the week that she died. I remember that. In the end, it only got to number two, and BBC Radio spent more time explaining why they weren't going to play it than the song actually lasts.
They should have tried to get Elvis Costello's Tramp the Dirt Down to number one, but, you know.
In a stupid bit of committee thinking, they played the significant bits of the chorus anyway. You would think that someone would try to get Margaret on the guillotine on the charts when right. she died, the Morrissey song.
Yeah.
While the destruction of northern industry has been terrible in real life, it occurred to me when recording my own review on rawfootage.co.uk, mm-hmm. his podcast, that it has been great for British comedy films.
Mm.
He's right about that.
Yeah.
Pride, Brassed Off, Billy Elliot are all set against the background of the coal pit closures. So is the hit song by Soho, Hippie Chick.
Really?
Well... No. She says, I've been loving you since the miners' strike. And I.
Okay.
So, anyway. Hey, it references. It references the miners' strike.
Fair enough.
It's a very important pop song of the past 25 years.
We'll count it.
You know you love that song.
It that's the one that samples How Soon Is Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Hippie Chick.
By Soho.
The full Monty is set against the background of the steel industry closing in Sheffield, and if you stretch a point, Calendar Girls is set against the background of the quasi-privatization of the NHS. They privatized the NHS?
Quasi, apparently. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I never saw Calendar Girls.
Look, we still envy your NHS.
Yeah, no
trust
kidding.
Me on
we
that
would
one.
We trade you in a hot minute.
Yeah. I think the formula is, if you put a seemingly insurmountable obstacle in front of plucky individuals, you get a heartwarming comedy when they finally overcome it. Margaret Thatcher and her legacy has put a hell of a lot of obstacles in front of a hell of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
A tiny thing that Americans won't pick up about Pride is that Paddy Considine's Welsh accent is crap.
We'll take your word for it.
Whereas Irish actor Andrew Scott's is surprisingly good. Also, the appearance of out actor Russell Tovey at the end of the film as Ben Schnetzer's significant ex-boyfriend also probably counts as stunt casting cameo because of his popularity on many UK TV shows. Well, he's on Looking as well. So,
yes, yes.
So, yeah.
We all know.
Americans know who Russell Tovey is now.
Yes.
In closing, I'll say that Alonzo was dead wrong about the box trolls, and that is true. Colin from Bath. Thank you, Colin.
Thank you, Colin, but I'm right about box trolls.
We're done.
Awesome.
We have another letter about Pride, but we'll read it next week because it's actually important because it
schools us.
It schools us a little bit. I actually have to go back and listen to our discussion about Pride to know if I feel like this schooling is...
Something you said, of course.
Is it something I said?
Yes. It's always something you said.
Okay, fine.
So we thank you for listening. Thank you to Blue for our awesome theme music. You can find out more about his amazing career as a musician at Bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA.com. Check out our friends online, ChristyLemire.com. Check out B-Movies Podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, The Brett Easton Ellis Podcast, Pod Crash, Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can, once again, subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, and if you want to leave us a nice review there, that really does help us a lot. And again, we're really sorry about Dave being such a jerk and making that guy not listen to us anymore.
I'm not sorry for nothing.
You can stream this program for free at Stitcher Radio.
I've done nothing wrong.
Or thelounge.com, or on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at TVTag.com, and drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with any questions or comments or top 10 lists or funny theater stories or anything else you want to share. And that is where you can PayPal us for shirts and extra shows and all of our goodies.
If anyone wants to defend me publicly, you can.
Don't encourage him.
I think I'm very nice.
We thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.